Coming up next on 88.1 FM, a chance to get to know one of your neighbors better on Porch Talk. Like all of our programming, Porch Talk is made possible in part by Watts members, who show their appreciation of community radio by donating to WWER. For more information, go to wwer.org/membership.
Hi, Father Nick.
Hi, Linda. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm so happy you agreed to let me give you the time and the opportunity to share who you are with our community. Just to let you all know, I'm Linda Wright, and I'm sitting in the most lovely garden, the St. Francis Garden at St. Mary's Episcopal Church on Washington Avenue. And I'm here with Father Nick Swoboda, and he is the pastor of St. Mary's Episcopal Church. So tell us a little bit about who you were before you came to Colonial Beach, and then we want to know how you got here.
Okay. Well, I grew up in Stratford, Connecticut, which is a large town of over 50,000 people on Long Island Sound. So it is kind of a beach town. So having a town near the water is very near and dear to my heart. And I spent my growing years there until I went off to college at Drew University in Madison, New Jersey, small liberal arts school, and I double majored in English literature and world religions. I had some sense when I started in college that I wanted to go into the ordained ministry, and I just needed to have an opportunity to explore a little bit. And I thought, especially with the world religions major, that it was important to understand how people's faith worked in a variety of ways, not just my own faith background, but how the various people of the world understood God and understood the supernatural and the divine. And I found that that was a really good preparation for the line of work that I'm in.
Well, it also makes you more open-minded and more approachable.
I think so.
Yeah, wonderful.
And so I'm able to interact with people of a variety of backgrounds because of that. I took classes. I took some classes in Christianity and church history and Bible and that sort of thing. But I also took classes in Judaism, Jewish mysticism, Jewish thought, and then also in Eastern religions, particularly the religions of India. And during my second year of college, between semesters in January, I had an opportunity with two professors and 13 other students to travel to India and spend three weeks there in southeastern India, mostly in a town called Chennai, which is also known as Madras. But then also we were out in a smaller town and in a village as well, learning about Indian culture and the way that people live at various levels of life in India. So it was a really once in a lifetime kind of experience for me. Yeah.
And did it change you in any way?
It changed me in the sense that I became more aware when I got back here of the struggles that people face in daily life. We saw people living in extreme poverty, and then we saw people who were in a comfortable level of existence, and it made me more aware of how those differences exist in our own society as well.
Which probably started the foundation for the priest that you became, having that understanding of poverty and the hardships of people, obviously,
I think that definitely contributed to a desire to make a difference in a world in a way that I hadn't really understood before. Yeah.
So you came back from India. Your mind was changed. Your heart was changed. When did you get the call? Was it a thunderbolt or a slow awareness?
For me, it's been more of a slow awareness, I would say, is how it unfolded for me. What initially attracted me to ordained ministry was when I was in middle school, the church that I attended in my hometown, and it was a church that I had grown up attending, got a new pastor. And I could tell he was very down to earth and very approachable, great preacher, awesome sermons, obviously cared about people. And I started to pay attention to what he did mm-hmm. and what his work was like. And there was something that was very attractive to me about it. I didn't really talk to him about it until I was 16. And I asked him, you know, how do I know if this attraction to ordained ministry really is a call or if it's just something that looks good to me? And he gave me some very good advice, which was to go off to college and maybe study something that could be a good preparation for seminary, but not to put all my eggs in one basket and to continue to think and pray about it. Mm-hmm. And so there was sort of a gradual unfolding that proceeded from there. When I was in college, that's when I discovered the Episcopal Church. Mm-hmm. I was raised in a denomination of Christianity called the United Church of Christ.
Oh, yes.
Which is a fairly progressive Protestant denomination. And I certainly had a good foundation mm-hmm. in that tradition and was raised to be a person of faith. But when I was in college, as I said earlier, I was exploring and I started to go to different kinds of churches. And when I went to the local Episcopal Church during the passing of the peace, which happens halfway during the church service, a gentleman who was seated a few pews in front of me came up to me, shook my hand and said, "Hi, I'm Doug. I see you're new here. Welcome to our church." And it was that spirit of welcome that initially attracted me to that congregation. And it wasn't that I was necessarily looking to change my affiliation, but I just wanted a place to call home while I was at school, you know, that would fill the gap I was missing from my congregation from back in my hometown. And as I got to know the Episcopal Church, it became more and more attractive to me. There was communion every Sunday, which was not something that we had in the United Church of Christ, at least not in the congregation where I grew up. And there was a deep connection to the history and the tradition of the faith that spoke to me. It wasn't just we have the Bible, which is certainly important, and what happened in the Hebrew Scriptures, the Old Testament, mm-hmm. and what happened in the New Testament. But then there was, after the time of Jesus, after the immediate time of Jesus and the apostles and the resurrection, going century by century, there were people of faith who had deep experiences of God, and I found that the Episcopal Church had an appreciation for that I hadn't mm-hmm. encountered before.
What's really fascinating to me is the passing of the peace and the reaching out from that one man mm-hmm. that totally made a difference in your life.
Right.
And we just never know that welcoming, that friendly handshake, what it's going to do for somebody.
Right, exactly.
That is amazing. So after you decided, where did you study? Oh, did you decide at that point that yes, you were going to, no, you went to college first, right?
Right.
So when you came back from India, mm-hmm. had you made that decision? How soon was it before you made the decision to go into the priesthood?
Well, it started to take shape in my junior year of college. Mm-hmm. And by that time, I was pretty sure that the Episcopal Church was where I was supposed to be. Whether I was going to be ordained or not, it felt like home. Mm-hmm. And so I went through the process of officially joining that parish that I had started to attend in college, Grace Church in Madison, New Jersey. And once I was officially part of the parish and officially part of the Episcopal Church, then I was in a position to go through or to start the discernment process for ordained ministry mm-hmm. in the Episcopal Church. And mm-hmm. what that looked like was sitting down and talking with the rector, who's the pastor, the head priest of the church, and it happened to be Mother Lauren was her name, and she had gotten to know me over the years and felt comfortable mm-hmm. sponsoring me for ordination. And so what really happened next was there had to be a committee of people from the parish who sat with me and had conversations with me over a period of 6 months to see if they felt or detected some sort of call to ordained ministry mm-hmm. in me. And I think that that's very important because that kind of interaction happens all along in the process in the Episcopal Church for ordained ministry. It's something which the individual certainly needs to feel some sort of call to ordained ministry. Mm-hmm. So all along in the process for ordination, discerning for ordination, there's got to be a sense from the community and from people in the congregation or whatever level the discernment is taking place at, that there is a call to ordained ministry or potential mm-hmm. call to ordained ministry.
So you have a community support.
Exactly.
Which is wonderful.
Yeah.
Which is wonderful. I'm going to veer off track a little bit, and you've told me about your spiritual path. Tell me about you. Do you have any particular interests outside of your call to ministry? What do you?
Well, there's a few things that really spoke to that in terms of coming to Colonial Beach and what's available here, what has been available here. I've dabbled in theater at various points in my life. I'm by no means a polished actor or anything like that. But I like being in front of people, mm-hmm. which is helpful in my work too. And so the Colonial Beach Playhouse that had started up here shortly before I arrived was something that was of real interest to me. And I got to be in a couple productions when I first got here, playing George Bailey and It's a Wonderful Life.
And you were very good, by the way.
Thank you so
I enjoyed your performance.
Yeah. And then also when we did the Twilight Zone radio plays, that was something that was a lot of fun too. And it's something that I'd like to do again, you know, mm-hmm. given time. But I also think that there's a lot of ways to support the arts in our community. Mm-hmm. So even if, you know, somebody's not interested in being on stage, when we finally get back to having Yay. Public performances, let's hope. You know, there's certain things that need to be done behind the scenes. You need to have that friendly person at the door taking tickets. Mm-hmm. All kinds of ways to support the theatrical arts in the community. And of course, there's a deep appreciation for the visual arts here in Colonial Beach in terms of having so many people who are painters or are mm-hmm. working in other media in the visual arts. And I am not an artist like that by any means. I haven't really even dabbled in it, but I like seeing what people can produce and seeing other people's creativity mm-hmm. and having things like the art walks that happen the second Friday of the month. It's just really a way of bringing the community together, and I like being a part of that and, mm-hmm. and seeing what people have created and appreciating what my neighbors see in the world around them.
Yeah.
Then also, for a while, we had some yoga happening in Colonial Beach, and I know that there's ways in which that's cropping up again as the pandemic subsides, but that was something that I found very important in terms of a desire to work on my physical well-being mm-hmm. along with my mental well-being and spiritual well-being as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's quite a spiritual practice, yoga, of course. And it's a way for me outside of my vocation and outside of the more public aspect of my faith to find a connection with God and the world around me.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's quite applicable to that.
Well, it's wonderful to see our priest engaged in yoga and on stage. You are truly a community priest. I mean, I know that feeds your personal soul, but it really makes people feel good to see you out and about. Makes you more approachable. It's wonderful.
I love that Colonial Beach is, and this is one of the things that attracted me to coming here. It's a small town, and there's times when it's quiet and maybe there's not quite so much going on, but there's just that right level of activity for me.
Yeah.
I do have an introverted side, and times when I need to just be by myself and recharge and not be in the midst of things that are going on. And it's easy to do that here and to find those opportunities for quiet reflection.
Yeah.
But then when I'm ready for the activity and when it's time to be active and out there, the activity is there, the opportunity to gather is there, the community is there. And so I really like that.
Wow. I've got so many other questions, but one of the things I want to know, because you mentioned community so much, do you have a vision, a personal vision, for what you would like St. Mary's to provide for this community?
That's a good question. And that's something that I think people are not, and maybe not just people at St. Mary's who are part of the congregation, but people who are part of the wider community are looking for, and I think also challenging me to produce. Or to have a sense about. And I think it's something that's not just going to emerge from me alone, but it's something that is going to emerge from St. Mary's as a congregation, as a community, with people talking to one another, and we're looking for ways to continue to do that.
Mm-hmm.
But just in general, and without having done a whole lot of detailed ironing out of what this might look like, I think that St. Mary's is called to be the kind of place that is, first of all, aware of what's going on in our community and what is touching the lives of people in our community. What are people's challenges, people's difficulties?
Mm-hmm.
There are people who are probably in town who are not quite as visible as others and who are not quite as connected as others. And so how do we reach out to those people and include them? And I know that there are many organizations and groups in town that are thinking about the same thing, you know.
Yeah.
So it's not just a St. Mary's thing. But I think St. Mary's is called to be a part of that, of a deepening awareness of who really is our neighbor, to get biblical about it. There was a time when Jesus was asked by a teacher of the law, well, who is my neighbor? And he told what's known as the parable of the Good Samaritan, which is really about, in some sense, someone noticing a person who is in distress, who is having difficulty, who's been beat down and robbed and cast off to the side. And responding to that. That also doesn't necessarily mean that, to bring it to something that we talked about before, that we're just talking about people who are in poverty.
Yeah.
And I think it's important to be aware of who amongst our neighbors are dealing with that situation, and to generate resources to be supportive and to help those people find community and to find the help that they need. But also, I think that people who may appear to be well off in every other aspect of their lives have their struggles and their need for a sense of belonging and a sense of community. And it's possible to look like you've got your ducks in a row and be very isolated.
Yes.
Or, you know, not really have the depth of relationship where people see you and know who you are. So I'm not just talking about becoming a social service agency mm-hmm. of some kind, although that's absolutely important that we have a social safety net in our community and have ways for people who are in dire need to reach out and receive help. But I would like St. Mary's to be the kind of place that really sees people for who they are and where they are, and helps people realize that it's okay to be who they are, and in a safe environment, certainly, and a supportive environment to bring their vulnerabilities,
and that they're important.
Exactly.
I was reflecting back at that one moment when Doug turned around and extended his hand to you in church, and in a way, a simple, like you said, we're not here to be a social working organization, but that human touch, that human gift of you're important. You know, there are many ways to make people feel connected, and it would be wonderful. You're right. I love the fact that you say the congregation, that we'll do that together, not just you, obviously, but I can see that being very powerful, and people are looking to do something right now.
Yeah.
Because of COVID, we've been so cooped up. And I know that St. Mary's does a wonderful job of distributing food. And that's something. Mm-hmm. That's important.
Right. Yeah, so, our food pantry volunteers do a fantastic job. Multiple times a month running that ministry.
Wonderful. Yeah. Well, is there anything else you would like our listeners to know about you, Father Nick?
Anything else I'd like them to know about me? I just feel at this point compelled to say that after 2.5 years of living in Colonial Beach, I love it here. And it's a place that feeds my soul.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just excited about what the future holds for us as a community.
Yeah.
I think that it was a real gift to find this place for me. And I think that there are probably other people out there who feel the same way. Mm-hmm. You know, we all have our struggles and every community has its challenges, but there's definitely a lot to be thankful for in Colonial Beach. And I think that one of the things I've learned over the years is that in the midst of challenges and troubles and difficulties, keeping a sense of gratitude along with that and in parallel with that is a tremendous help and a tremendous way to move forward is to just stop and appreciate life.
Yeah.
And appreciate life's gifts despite its challenges. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot to be thankful for here in Colonial Beach.
Oh, yeah.
So let's be thankful for one another.
Yeah, and we're thankful that you chose to come here. And I'll see you on Sunday.
Yes, I'll see you Sunday.
Thanks, Father Nick.
Thanks, Linda.
The programming on 88.1 FM is made possible in part by WWER Watts members, who show their support of community radio by donating online at wwer.org/membership. If you like our programming, please consider contributing to wwer.org/membership.